Thank you, Brother Eden. I don't know about this tie business. I don't know whether that discredits me or gives me a little bit more impact. I don't know, but was talking about one of those questions you ask about what God made Adam out of. Reminded me of the story about the little boy that came home from Bible class one Sunday. They'd studied the story of Adam and Eve and creation that Sunday morning. He came home, and as he's changing his clothes and getting ready for dinner, came running into the kitchen. "Mama, Mama, come quick, come quick." He said, "Why? What's the matter?" He says, "Well, they told me in Bible class they made Adam out of dust." She said, "That's right." She said, "Well, come quick." He said, "Come quick. There's a man under my bed, and I don't know whether he's coming or going." Good to be here. Been out here a couple of times. First time I was ever out here was the day after the old building burned. Came out to check that out, and I don't guess they ever did find out who did that, did they?
Never did.
But so looks like y'all had another fire out there. Was you preaching Sunday morning, Brother?
We had a water remembrance.
That's what somebody told me. Said vehicle just burned. Just y'all keep it just fired up around here. And I told Brother Edens, I want to put in a plug here now. I've been going to camp. I'm not going anymore. I've retired. I retired this year, or after camp last year, for the sixth time camp work. But we need to get more of these youngins going to camp. Now, let me tell you, let me just give you a commercial here. Now, y'all know that we're trying to build a camp out in Butler County. But when we get that thing built, in fact, next year, we need to have more of y'all's folks, boys and girls, go to camp. There is nothing in this world that will impact your kids more than taking them to the church camp.
Amen.
You get them away from them. One of our rules is no cell phones, no iPads, no iPods, no electronic devices. We don't have a TV there. And in fact, the counselor in the oldest girl's cabin this year kind of raised a ruckus because first thing she did, she said, "You bring your cell phone?" They said, "Yeah." He said, "Give it to me." She took them away from them. They had to go a whole week, you know, and they learned they could survive without that cell phone. But I have been involved with camp since 1973. I've seen hundreds, literally hundreds of kids baptized at camp. Now, they may have been baptized anyway. Don't know, but they may not have. But they get off to camp and they get with other boys and girls. There's a story in the Old Testament about a man named Elijah. You remember Elijah got discouraged. Got out under that juniper tree and he said, "I alone am left." He thought he was all alone. And he said, "God, just take my life." What did God tell him? There were 7,000 that had not bowed the knee to Baal. Everybody needs to know that I'm not alone in this business of fighting the devil. Our kids need to know that because they go to school and they hear all this cussing and carrying on and they hear all this mess that's going on in school. Y'all saw the thing on the news last week about how they treated that woman on the bus.
Absolutely.
Our kids see that and they think that's just the way everybody is. But you get them off of camp, they get with another 100 kids and these 100 kids are trying to do the right thing and trying to go to church, and they say, "Hey, I'm not alone after all." You know, we need that, don't we? We need that kind of encouragement. Kids need it too, so maybe we can work a little bit on that. Y'all got a bunch of kids here in this neighborhood. And parents, let me share with you a story. Let me share with you something you can use. Because we use this with our son. He's grown. We got two grandkids now, but when he was younger, we wanted him to do something. You know how kids are, new things. They don't want, you know, they don't want to try. You know, they're afraid. They don't know what what's going on. So I would always tell him, and I'd do this for camp one year. I said, "Well, Joey, I'm your father, and Mom and I think we know what's best. I'm going to make you do it this year. But if you don't want to do it anymore, I'll never make you do it again. How's that deal?" And that's a pretty good deal, I think. Most kids go for that. "Well, I'll try it once. I'm going to make you do it one time. If you don't like it, I'm going to make you do it again. But I'll guarantee you, 99.9% of the kids you send to the camp the first time, they'll go back. I guarantee you. So much for that. It's a joy to be here. Let me move this thing up here where I can get a little closer. I think it'll sit. Yeah, it'll sit right there. With all of the advancements in technology, and you know, when this old church building was built here, could you think that they could possibly imagine having this PowerPoint and all that kind of stuff? I rather suspect some folks came in here with a sheet, you know. And anybody ever remember those old rag sermons, those sheets with the outline on it, or flannel board, or whatever, as just the original PowerPoint presentations, all that was. But anyway, with all of this technology we've got going on, we really do live in an information age. A fellow by the name of D. Hawk said this: "We are now at a point in time when the ability to receive, utilize, store, transform, and transmit data, the lowest cognitive form, has expanded literally beyond comprehension. Understanding and wisdom are largely forgotten as we struggle under an avalanche of data and information." Well, I think he's right. Can you imagine how much information is at your fingertips today that just a few years ago we could not have imagined? We could not have imagined. I finally built a bit to bullet. I've been carrying one of those little flip phones. And I find the bit to bullet got me a smartphone. I don't know how I feel about that, you know. Carrying something around your pocket is smarter than you are. I can't figure out all the buttons. I've called people, not even knowing I called them. And I hear, "What's that noise?" out of my pocket. "Hello, hello, hello." But that cell phone now, there's a button on that cell phone. I can push that button and it'll show me where I'm at on a map. And then I can push another button and it turns into a picture off a satellite. If I had it here in my hand, I could push that button and it'd show me that I'm at the end of Mount Zion Church Road. It'd have that name on that road. And then I could push another button and you'd see a picture of this church building. Isn't that amazing? Unbelievable. What information and knowledge that we have at our immediate disposal. But did you notice what he said in that last part? Understanding and wisdom are largely forgotten as we struggle under an avalanche of data and information. In our lesson tonight, we want to discuss gaining wisdom from the book of Proverbs. Now, I rather suspect that we may repeat some stuff that's been said earlier. That's almost inevitable when we come to study something like this. I did look back and see what the other lessons were about, and I don't know how the other speakers approached those lessons. And so we may repeat some things, but hopefully not too much. And if we do repeat it, that's a good way to learn, isn't it? That's how we learn 2 + 2 = 4 and able to say that just like that, because we repeated it over and over and over again. But I want to first consider what wisdom in the book of Proverbs is, what is its value, and then ask 3 questions about wisdom. First, what is wisdom and its value? Solomon is often called the wisest man that ever lived. Now, his wisdom is preserved in 3 books in the Bible. I'm not going to ask you what they are, not like Brother David did, but you know what they are: Proverbs, Song of Solomon, and Ecclesiastes. These 3 books fall into a category, and of course the Bible is literally a library of lots of different books and lots of different types of literature. You know, out in the secular world, you have novels, and you may have mystery novels, and you may have historical novels, and you may have nonfiction, and you may have political commentary, and so forth and so on. Well, there's different kinds of literature in the Bible as well. And Psalms, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, all fall into a category that's called wisdom literature, because it's just that. It tells us what wisdom we need to live our life. And Proverbs is one of Solomon's contribution to that category of literature. And Proverbs is probably the most familiar next to the book of Psalms, at least for most members of the church. Now, One of the things I find quite fascinating about the book of Proverbs is, and open your Bible to the book of Proverbs now, because I want to show you something. Look at, and I'm going to ask you to read. I want you to participate here just like the kids do. I want somebody to read Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 1 for me. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 1.
Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviest of his mother.
Okay, I'm not wanting to look too much at the second half of that right now, just the first half. The Proverbs of Solomon. That's where the collection of Proverbs actually begins. Way over in chapter 10 and verse 1. Well, what then is the first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs? If the Proverbs actually start in chapter 10 and verse 1, what's the first 9 verses? First 9 chapters. The first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs are actually a Hebrew poem. We would call it an ode, O-D-E. And an ode is a loose verse. It doesn't have to rhyme, doesn't have to have meter and so forth. But it is an ode. It's a tribute to wisdom. The first 9 chapters are a lengthy Hebrew poem in tribute to wisdom. After he establishes what wisdom is and the value of wisdom, then he starts telling you some of that wisdom with these proverbs. And if you read through the book of Proverbs, as you read the first 9 chapters, you get to chapter 10, you'll notice, wait, the way this thing reads changes. So we're going to look at chapters 1 through 9, not all of them. We're going to look in chapters 1 through 9, because in that poetic tribute to wisdom, Solomon tells us much about the wisdom that he's going to share with us in chapters 10 and following. Wisdom is the fear of the Lord. Let's someone read for me chapter 2, verses 1 through 7. I'm sorry, chapter 1, verses 1 through 7.
Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction.
Okay, he starts out saying, the Proverbs, the purpose of the Proverbs is to know wisdom and instruction and to perceive the words of understanding. I'm reading from the New King James. To receive instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. What is the difference between wisdom and knowledge? What's the difference between wisdom and, or is there any difference? Very good. Wisdom is knowledge put to practice. We've all known some people who knew a lot but weren't very wise. We've also known some people who were very wise but weren't that well educated, haven't we? And so there's a difference between wisdom and knowledge. And going back to that quote I shared with you at the very beginning, one of the problems we have today is we've got a lot of knowledge, but sometimes we don't know how to use it. We don't know how to put it in practice. We're not very wise with that knowledge. And so wisdom serves to give us understanding, instruction, justice, judgment, and equity. Flip over to Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 1. In this poem, this lengthy poem that's an ode or a tribute to wisdom, Solomon personifies wisdom. That is, he gives wisdom characteristics of human beings. You know, we do that a lot with animals, you know. I'm not a big dog person, not a big pet person, and I get right tickled sometimes at people who attribute human qualities to their dog or their cat or something like that. And, you know, I know a lady in the nursing home, and you know, she treats her dog like it's her son. But anyway, Solomon here personifies wisdom. Notice what he says. Proverbs 8, verse 1. Does not wisdom cry out, and understanding lift up her voice? She takes her stand on top of the high hill beside the way where the paths meet. She cries out by the gates at the entry of the city, at the entrance of the doors. To you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O you simple ones, understand prudence, and you fools, be of an understanding heart. Listen, for I will speak of excellent things. Now, this is wisdom talking. And from the opening of my lips will come right things, for my mouth will speak truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are with righteousness. Nothing crooked or perverse is in them. They are all plain to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things one may desire cannot be compared to her. Wisdom cries out. Wisdom calls out to the simple. Wisdom calls out to those who are in the entrance of the doors and tells him or them that wisdom is better than silver, and wisdom is better than choice gold. Wisdom is the fear of the Lord, and that wisdom that is the fear of the Lord is better than gold and silver. Now, only a fool would ignore what wisdom has to offer. Let's go back to Proverbs chapter 1. And look at verse 5. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and the riddles, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Wisdom is the fear of the Lord. It has a greater value than gold and silver, and only a fool would reject what it has to offer. In the wisdom literature, the book of Proverbs and Psalms, on more than one occasion, and you can finish this quote, we learn that the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And those that reject the wisdom of God would say that. Or they would say, well, the Bible's full of myths and contradictions. Why would we be concerned about what a bunch of Jews wrote over 2,000 years ago? That's foolishness. But as Paul said in 1 Corinthians, the foolishness of God is wiser than men. The weakness of God is stronger than men. And wisdom understands that. Because, as we'll see, it helps us to know how to live. So Solomon then further reminds us of the value of wisdom in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. Someone read that for us.
Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that giveth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor.
Two more verses.
Her ways of pleasantness and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay it hold upon her, and happy is everyone ever found her.
Okay, notice that section begins with happiness, ends with happiness. Happy is the man who has wisdom. And notice, and we'll look at this again in a few minutes, look at all the things that wisdom provides in that passage. We'll look at that again in a few minutes. Alrighty. One reason that this wisdom is so valuable is that the wisdom that Solomon wants to share with us in the Proverbs from chapter 10, verses 1 through the end of the book, that wisdom to which he is paying great tribute in the first 9 chapters, one of the reasons it is so valuable is because it is eminently practical. It is eminently practical. Let's look at a couple of passages that show us that. Look at Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 7. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. In all of your getting, get understanding. And look at Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11, to give us one example, and we'll look at one more, of the practicality of the book of Proverbs. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which, having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. That's a practical admonition, isn't it? Practical admonition. And if one follows that, he'll probably never be hungry. Another practical admonition, Proverbs chapter 6, verses 27 to 29. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent. And that is the conclusion to an admonition not to fall victim to the evil woman and her flattering ways and flattering tongue. And he says, can a man take fire into his bosom and his clothes not be burned? I know how many times, and we've all experienced this, maybe when we were younger, but we went to a cookout and had a bonfire. You're going to roast weenies, marshmallows, maybe make s'mores. And so you get these big long sticks and put your weenie on there and you get close as you can to the fire, and your hand's burning, your face is burning. And it doesn't seem like wherever you stand, what happens? The smoke follows you. Always happened to me that way because they told me that smoke follows beauty. Right, yeah. And so your smoke, your clothes get that smell of smoke on them. You know, you can't avoid it. And you can't take fire in your bosom and not be burned. You can't mess around with these seductress type of women and not get burned by it. And that illustrates so well the practical wisdom of the book of Proverbs. You can't walk on hot coals and not have your feet to be burned. And that practical wisdom, you know, applies in so many ways. So wisdom is, as we've suggested, and as I'm sure you've studied already, wisdom is not just more knowledge. Wisdom is knowing what to do with the knowledge that you have and letting that wisdom guide us through life. And we see its value. All right, comment or question on that thus far? Observation. Redirect.
Mike, we used to have a teacher here, and she passed away a few years ago, but one of her favorite comments was that people that had wisdom and didn't know how to apply it was educated idiots. That was her term for it.
Well,
she had a good point, didn't she?
Yeah. You remember the guy by the name of Jerry Clower?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jerry Clower, one of my favorite stories that he told was about, he said he was waiting in the waiting room in Los Angeles to go on stage one day, had his feet up on a little table, sitting on a couch with his feet up on a little table, had his lizard skin boots on. And he said this woman come walking by and says, "Oh, boots, your boots. She said, what's wrong with my boots? It's those boots, some one of God's creatures gave his life for those boots. He said, I looked up at her and said, woman, you educated beyond your intelligence. That's exactly what you're talking about. People being educated beyond their intelligence. And that's what we're talking about at the very beginning. Some people have a lot of knowledge, but they don't know what to do with it. He went on to say, I scraped that lizard up out of the middle of I-10 down near Dallas. But at any rate, all right, any other comment or question about wisdom, what it is and its value? Let's ask three questions about wisdom. First, how do you get it? How do you get it? Now that raises an interesting question, one that's kind of fascinated me over the years. There's a branch of science called epistemology that comes from a Greek word meaning knowledge. And epistemology is the study of how we learn things. How do we come to know things? And how do we come to know things? How do you come to know things?
Study.
Study. Okay. Experience. Your own self-discovery and your study.
Listen.
Experience, huh?
Listen.
Listen. Well, that's part of being taught. You're taught your self-discovery, experience. What else? You know, like that's how you learn that the stove is hot. You touched it one time, you found out it's hot. That's experience. You know, that's how you learn when you're driving a nail, don't hold the nail down at the bottom by the wood. Hold it up here at the top so if you miss strike, it won't mash that finger against whatever you're nailing it into. That's experience. You learn things by experience. Some things you're taught. Who's first president of the United States? George Washington. How do you know that? Somebody taught you. You didn't know him, did you? Or maybe you went to Mount Vernon. You saw his picture. But you taught. You learned that. That's how you come to learn certain things. How do you know that God created the world? We learn that by revelation. Right? We can't discover that on our own. Even our self-discovery. We can learn, maybe suppose that there's a creature out there that brought this into existence. That's the argument that Paul uses in Romans chapter 1. You look at what's around you and you got a reason from what you see to something that's beyond us, but you don't know anything about it. And so God reveals himself to us. There's some things we cannot know, we cannot learn other than by revelation. The wisdom that Solomon is going to share with us is like that. Some of it is learned by experience. Some of it's learned because we're taught. Some of it we learn in our own self-discovery. Some of it is learned by revelation. How do you get wisdom? That brings us to the question, how do you get wisdom? Well, same way, from our experience, others' experience. Let me just show you that Solomon is, interestingly enough, Solomon, in this tribute to wisdom, really stresses that we need to listen to those who've had experience. Look at Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 8. Somebody read that for us. Proverbs 1:8.
Fear my son, follow instruction. Do not forsake your brother's teaching.
Somebody read Proverbs 2:1-2.
Son, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments,
read Proverbs 3:1. Proverbs 4:1.
Hear, son, the instruction of the father, and give attention that you may understand.
Verse 20 of that same chapter.
My son, give attention to my words, and incline your ear to my saying.
What's Solomon trying? And by the way, in those first 9 verse chapters, 12 times he says something like that. What do you think he's trying to communicate about wisdom?
What word is there, to me it means pay attention.
Yeah, pay attention. To what?
To what I know.
Yeah, what I know.
How many of you went through this in your lifetime?
And I meant to look this up and forgot it. But we've all read that little kind of line by line piece of prose that says, when I was 4 years old, Daddy could do anything. And when I was 6 years old, you know, he was my hero, so forth, so forth, so on. And then when I got to be 15, I thought he was the dumbest person in the world. When I got to be 30, I realized he's a lot smarter than I thought he was. You've seen that. And then now that I've got my own children, I wish I could talk it over with him one more time. And the point being is that Solomon is wanting us to listen and learn from the experience of others. One of the things I always try to teach kids when I have the opportunity to do so is there's a reason why your parents don't want you to do certain things.